It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WAVE. Happy to have you along. I'm Dennis O'Hare. It's Friday. The political breakfast buffet is filled, and Brian Robinson and Theron Johnson are back with us. Brian is a former deputy chief of staff and communications director for Georgia Governor Nathan Deal. He's a Republican strategist. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist, and he is former National Southern Regional Director for President Obama's 2012 campaign. Hey, guys, welcome back.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Theron, let's start with you. The Democratic National Committee is meeting this weekend here in Atlanta. Tomorrow, they elect a new chair. This after internal fighting over the future direction and strategy for the party. Can they come out of this with any kind of cohesive, unified direction?
Yes, and I think we will do that. Listen, we got our butts whipped in the presidential race, and so everyone now has a lot of opinions and folks got a lot of great ideas. I think Democrats, we got to focus on two things. One, we got to have a vision for America that really resonates with a lot of Obama voters who voted for Donald Trump in November. Secondly, we've got to have a 50-state strategy. We've got to focus on every single race from Congress to U.S. Senate races on down to mayor's races and local races, and really have a message about jobs, because I think that's what a country wants to hear. And I think Democrats can really appeal to these working class Americans who are very upset right now with Donald Trump.
One thing I noticed, and I looked at all of the candidates for all of the top offices, not just chair, but vice chair, all the way down through treasurer, etc. Not one is from Georgia. Democrats here have been complaining that the national party doesn't pay enough attention to Georgia, that this was a winnable state this past year. So if Georgia Democrats want the party to pay more attention to them, why don't we see a Democrat from Georgia running for one of these top posts?
Well, I think the Democratic National Committee is paying attention to Georgia. That's why they're having their election tomorrow here for the next chair.
But a Georgia candidate could certainly influence future decisions.
Absolutely. But let's be fair, Dennis. We have a good representation on the Democratic National Committee Executive Committee. A lot of those folks, I believe, will be reappointed. And so I think you're right. I mean, we should have had someone run for one of these offices, but I don't think that will discourage nor hinder the DNC's efforts to want to basically try to turn Georgia blue again.
Brian, do Republicans watch the DNC meeting this weekend and say, hey, have they learned anything, especially in a state like Georgia, which is increasingly purple when it comes to statewide races?
I think what you're seeing amongst the Democrats sort of ratifies what you saw in the last election, that Democrats have basically abandoned the white working class and really aren't even going to make a play for them anymore. You are going in a much more leftist direction. And I think you saw this in the U.S. House leadership elections when, by an overwhelming margin, a leftist from San Francisco, a coastal elite, if you will, easily trounced a heartland blue-collar representing Democrat from Ohio. So those folks are really being left behind, and increasingly in really overwhelming numbers are coming to the Republican Party. So, you know, the Democrats' strategy is being cemented here that they're just going to go hard left and hope that they can build their coalition there. And maybe I assume that their strategy is to go hard enough left where they fire up this Bernie Sanders base and really and get them to show up at the polls. But, you know, I don't know that America is yet a socialist country, but that seems to be where they're going.
We'll be here all day because I can make it really smart. Let's keep it going. It's okay.
On that note, let's turn it around then. Brian, we have Republicans saying that Democrats have ignored their voters, their potential constituents in the middle class, and yet we have folks turning out for town meetings that Republican lawmakers have been having. Senator David Perdue says, well, I'm not going to hold one of those. I'll do other means of communicating with constituents, like telephone town halls, one-on-one meetings, et cetera. We've heard from folks who said, look, we tried to set those up with him and were unsuccessful, even though we got to meet with staff. So are Republicans in danger here in avoiding the town meetings of doing exactly what you're saying the Democrats are doing, not paying attention?
No. The people who show up at these town hall meetings in any scenario are a tiny fraction of the voting population.
But they said that about the Tea Party.
Well, that's true. I think what you're seeing here is these protesters showing up, perhaps from other congressional districts, into these very red Republican districts and trying to disrupt town halls. The people who are out those town halls are either not constituents or, at the very least, a very small minority of the district or the member that they're protesting. Now, as for David Perdue, I don't blame him. He's doing exactly what I would recommend if I was on his staff. Why create a platform for your political opposition to ambush you in front of cameras? That is what this is all about. This is not about policy. This is not about trying to have a constructive dialogue. This is about confrontation. This is about trying to embarrass our elected officials and creating a bad visual on TV.
Be that as it may, though, does it indicate some groundswell among the electorate, even among quiet ones, that, hey, maybe they're concerned about, let's say, what you replace Obamacare with, that there is a genuine groundswell of concern about the direction the party is going?
I think there's a genuine groundswell of interest, even amongst Republicans, that as we repeal Obamacare, that we have something ready to go in its place. Even hardcore, very conservative Republicans want there to be a plan, because there's an understanding that this is the structure that we have today, and many people are getting their health care through that structure. So it's going to have to be replaced, or we will have chaos. So it's not to say that what we have now is great. Republicans do want it gone, no doubt about it. We want it trashed. But there needs to be something super better, or as President Trump has promised, something terrific that's going to replace it.
Republicans are in trouble. And no matter how Brian tries to spin this, you see it every single day on the television. You hear it on this station. People are upset. People are hurting. Now, this whole notion that Brian is saying that these are folks who don't live in these congressional districts, these are people who are being bussed in from other areas. It's just like Donald Trump's claim that there was massive voter fraud but has no evidence to prove it. Brian has no evidence that these people are not hardworking constituents who, quite frankly, probably voted for Donald Trump and is scared out of their minds because this gentleman has gone into the White House and has no plan to basically continue health care for 20 million Americans right now who want it. Now, let's also talk about the folks who are actually at these town hall meetings. These are white working class people that the Republican Party turned their backs on. So when they go to these town hall meetings, many of whom voted for Trump, but these are people who voted for Donald Trump because they had problems with status quo mainstream establishment Republicans. So these town hall meetings are not new for many of these Republicans because these folks were complaining years ago and they're complaining now. They're just asking these elected officials to do their job. Now let's bring it home to David Perdue. David Perdue is a friend of mine. David Perdue and I actually talk a lot. He is one of the few Republicans that I actually feel like I have a really good relationship with. Sometimes I have to question my relationship with Brian because he gets on these shows and starts talking crazy. You cannot be an elected official and be in a public servant, and I want to stress public servant position, and ignore the public, okay? Do not be on a ballot to be elected for public service if you cannot face your constituents and have a very civil conversation about, you know, the future of this country. When Donald Trump had folks at his rally, well, people were saying lock her up, people were fighting African-Americans and Hispanics at these rallies, David Perdue and another senator was there to say, well, you know what, we need to have peaceful protests or we need to have peaceful conversations. No, they egged that on. Why, Dennis? Because they wanted Donald Trump to become president. Now this guy is in office. He's not doing a good job. He's got the worst approval rating than any president in the country in the first 4 or 5 weeks. And now these senators want to run from the people that elected them into office. To me, this is suicidal politically for him. And I think that he's got to answer these folks. I think he's got to meet with them. And it's only going to get worse because right now, the Republicans, they don't have a base. And Donald Trump is their president who they elected. And now these senators and these members of Congress are going home and say, oh, my God, what do we get ourselves into?
I have to respond to some of that gibberish because, first of all, the idea that some of these people showing up, that many of these people showing up are Trump voters who have changed their minds, that's ridiculous.
No, they say it, Brian. If you look at, read the transcripts. You know, I know you like to watch Fox News, and Fox News actually does a pretty good job of actually interviewing the people who are there. These are folks who live in these congressional districts who say, I voted for you, Congressman such and such. I voted for Donald Trump, but don't repeal and replace Obamacare because it will hurt me and my families. These are what these folks are saying.
These aren't the people who are chanting. Republicans don't chant. We don't march. That's something that y'all do.
Y'all did chant. You lock her up. The whole
position. Yeah, that's true. We did.
And y'all are marching now. you may want to adopt some of these Democratic tactics, yes, because now you guys want change, right? Now you're marching. You've never done that before.
I don't think that these are Trump voters out there. I think these are Democrats. I don't care what, if they say they voted for us or not. As far as Senator Perdue goes, he has 10 million constituents. So the idea that he can meet with every single one who has a viewpoint is a bit silly. That's what we have staff for. And no one has to guess where Senator Perdue is on these issues. I mean, he tweets, he puts it on Facebook, he does interviews. I have not talked to him personally on this, but I know exactly where he stands. He's been a very outspoken Trump supporter. And as far as the public viewpoints on Trump, I think what you're seeing, if you really dig deep into some of this polling, people are – they're tired of the antics. They're tired of the tweeting, and they're tired of the personal attacks and that sort of thing. But many Americans who can look past that are saying, but I like what he's doing. I like where he is on policy. I like the
direction. What policy? Oh, we're talking about executive orders that are unconstitutional?
They're unconstitutional? Oh, they were unconstitutional. Because they were certainly fine for the last 8 years.
Right. You know what President Obama did? He made sure he talked to his attorney general. He talked to his Justice Department. And if they told him not to sign the executive order, he wasn't so much of a dictator like this president.
Obama
would go ahead and do it anyway.
Was overturned by the courts over and over and over again.
But it did not create this chaos that we have in this country where it shut down
airports. Oh, DACA didn't create chaos? That was not a gigantic constitutional
overreach.
Let me
respond to this. So this thing that Brian wants to say that, listen, I want to say this. David Perdue is a friend. I talked to him. And I bet you that he wants to talk to these constituents, right? Because if you look at the campaign that David Perdue ran, he ran a very inclusive campaign. Then let's give him some credit. He came out and was one of the first people to endorse Donald Trump. Now, if you got all of this political capital and you're this man of the people, why not go out and have a town hall meeting or meet with groups to just talk about the future of this country? I bet you that David Perdue wants to do this. His staff, Martha Zoller and others that I know personally, Martha Zoller is one of my favorite Republicans. Brian is my second favorite most times. They are probably doing exactly what Brian is advising to do. But I would warn them that at a time when this country is divided, people are upset about jobs. People are upset about health care. People don't know how we're going to, you know, keep this country protected. He better respond to them. He better figure out a very controlled atmosphere where he can have a conversation with his constituents.
At the end of the day, Republicans are going to be judged by the outcome of the next 2 years. We have got to do something to begin to raise the salaries of that blue-collar America that has been stuck in neutral for the last 30 years. We've got to give them that ladder up into the next rung of economic stability and success so that they can at least do better for themselves and hope that their kids can do better than they have done. That's what we're going to be judged on. We're going to be judged on how we repeal and replace Obamacare. We're going to be judged by what we do on taxes. Let's look past all the noise.
Back to the state capitol. Brian, your old boss, Governor Nathan Deal, said, "No way on RFRA," if you want to coin a little poetic license.
That was pretty clever, Dennis. Good job.
I'm really glad to see the governor close the door on this. There's no need for this to suck up all of the oxygen of the second half of the General Assembly session. We've got a lot of pressing, important issues that we have to take care of. We have an ongoing rural health care problem. We've got the big casino issue that's still looming out there. We've still got to pass the state budget. There's no need in having the entire focus of the General Assembly, and I might add, the focus of the national media and major businesses looking to relocate to places like Georgia, focus on an issue that's so divisive. Look, if there was any threat to religious freedom in Georgia, Nathan Deal would be on the front lines to fight on the side of people of faith to exercise their conscience. He absolutely would be. There is no threat to our First Amendment rights. The First Amendment does not need a state law to back it up. People can exercise their rights as they see fit. All this law would do is send the message to the rest of the country that Georgia wants to kind of wink at some discrimination. And that's not what we need. We know that we benefited dramatically from what North Carolina did last year. A lot of that business came to us. So we have money in our pocket. We don't want to get rid of it.
Listen, Governor Deal is to be commended for doing what he did yesterday, and that is saying, listen, let's not have a conversation about a piece of legislation that is intended to discriminate on people in their workplaces, at their homes, and also it will have effects on business. Now, the other thing that the governor should be commended about is, as Brian pointed out, listen, he's got a very, very tough session ahead of him. I mean, he's also got a new OSD package. It's wrapped up in some new gift paper. A lot of the stuff in there is still the same, but it's, you know, it's pretty.
OSD is Opportunity School District.
Yeah. And so now he is to be commended. But I would ask the governor to go a step further. I would ask the governor to echo what Brian just said, to say that Georgia is a place where we do not welcome any discrimination, especially people who are in the LGBTQ community, folks who are constantly being discriminated in the workplace. I would ask him to really go out and to stand shoulder to shoulder with some of these other organizations and a lot of these folks in the business community who, yes, they came out and they stepped up in opposition to the Religious Freedom Bill, but also, I think that we got to deal with some of the issues of discrimination. And also, we got to deal with some of the divide that we have in this country, particularly in Georgia, when it comes to the issues of race.
Very quickly to casinos and Theron, full disclosure, you are one of the lobbyists representing one of the companies interested in bringing casino to Georgia. But this week, a Senate committee postponed a hearing on a casino bill. Of course, the clock is ticking toward the deadline for getting legislation from one side to the other. Theron, I'll start with you. Does this mean that the drive is slowing down?
What this means, Dennis, is that we got to continue to have conversations on both sides of the aisles, particularly with a focus on committee members, mm-hmm. particularly in the Senate.
Is the concern location, or is it something else in terms of actually putting this together?
There are some people who have some concerns about means testing and also about needs-based scholarship money.
In other words, where the money would go.
Where the money goes. And so we're having a conversation about money. So I don't think we've really gotten to location yet, because before you can talk about locations and all that, you've got to get a bill passed. So I'm still very optimistic. This is how, you know, laws are made in Georgia, where there's a lot of back and forth. And as long as we're continuing to have conversations with the Senate and the House and the governor's office and lieutenant governor's office, I think we're in good shape.
It's definitely still alive, but I think the fact that you had those hiccups show that there's still a lot of consternation about it. And in full disclosure on my end, I work for a coalition of arts and culture venues that are concerned about mm-hmm. being priced out of the market by casinos. So I just want to say that.
Oh, because wow, I'm so glad you finally disclosed that. I was wondering why, like, a few weeks ago, you were standing up for this arts and entertainment community folks.
And that's because, just to point out here very quickly, that's because casinos put on entertainment shows, sometimes bringing big names in, and a lot of the local venues would be concerned about that.
That's right. And exclusivity agreements and not letting you work within a radius of the casino, et cetera. So what I've been interested in that process is how many groups, how many senators have reached out to this coalition to say, hey, we want to work with you because we're against casinos. And we're like, well, you know, we're not against casinos. We're just for making sure that we don't hurt what we've already got that's important. So it's been eye-opening to me to see that there is a lot of entrenched opposition to this. It's not, you know, just the details over where they're going to be located and where the money's going to go. There is entrenched opposition to the idea itself in some corners. And I've seen senators in other ways try to have political cover because they don't want to be asked after the session, hey, why are you against fixing HOPE or helping HOPE? And so they're coming up with bills that tinker with the lottery and that sort of stuff that won't really work in the long run. But it gives them something to say, hey, well, I'm against casinos, but I tried to fix it on this other end. So you're seeing folks plan for being against casinos.
But one of the things I want to point out is that MGM has been meeting with folks from the arts and entertainment community for over 2 years now. Virginia Heppner over at the Woodruff Arts Foundation and Center is someone who I've served on the board there. We had meetings 2 years ago. So I'm very happy that Brian actually has come out and said that the arts and entertainment community is not against casinos. Now, this whole notion that they don't want gambling in Georgia, newsflash to our listeners. We already have gambling in Georgia. But what this is really about, Dennis, is that we have an opportunity to spend upwards of $2 billion to build a very state-of-the-art destination resort casino in Georgia. And we're talking about bringing 5,000 to 6,000 to maybe even 7,000 jobs. So at a time where we know that Georgia needs these jobs, at a time where we know that there's a need for funding for HOPE, and it's been all written about and on TV stations for the last few weeks, I just think that folks have got to be open-minded about this. And I think that we've got to work together to try to get this passed.
And at Atlanta's City Hall, reporters, including several of us here at WABE, are still digging through all those documents related to the bribery scandal. A second contractor pled guilty this week to paying bribes to win city contracts. And then the FBI took equipment from the procurement office, and the chief procurement officer was fired. Theron, as Mayor Reed has admitted, that was not a good day.
Well, this is a very bad situation. And it's something that I know that the mayor is very disappointed, and he's very discouraged by this. The one thing that's so unfair is that you have so many people who work at the city of Atlanta who come in every day, who are public servants, who are there to do the right thing. It's very unfortunate when you have a few bad people who allegedly, in this recent case, may or may not be involved in some illegal activities. And so this is something that is not good. This is something that I think the mayor has come out and said that he's going to try to get to the bottom of as soon as he can. It has really cast a very negative stigma at City Hall, and it's just something that I hope that he's able to get past.
Again, as we've discussed in the previous weeks on this show, this is going to cast a shadow over the final year of the Reid administration. We're already seeing it. It's the drip, drip, drip. No, you know, more news. The FBI raid this week. That is not what you want to see come across the news alert in the middle of the morning if you were at City Hall. I am yet to see any scenario in my government service where one person has the ability to rig a system, enrich themselves, and take bribes. It's always going to be a much larger group of colluding bureaucrats who are getting rich at the trough. So I think there are going to be more shoes to drop because one person could not have pulled this off. The secret will be finding out how far up this goes.
One of the things that I want to point out, Dennis, and you've said this previously, is that this is an ongoing investigation. So as we sit here this morning, we talk about this, there may be more information that comes out. But I think Brian would agree with me that we've got to be fair. And that is that the mayor, I think, is doing everything he possibly can within the jurisdictions of this investigation to move swiftly. And I do believe that Adam Smith, who I know is a good public
That's
servant.
That's the chief procurement officer who was fired.
Is a good public servant. But unfortunately, with the optics and what happened this week at City Hall, it's definitely not good.
Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist and former National Southern Regional Director for the Obama 2012 campaign. Brian Robinson, a Republican strategist and former Deputy Chief of Staff to Georgia Governor Nathan Deal and Chief Communications Officer for him. Thanks to both of you. We'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis.